And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning and a very good Tuesday morning. It is the 19th of March, 2024, and at 7 minutes past nine, you're very welcome along to another week of the 9 till noon show, albeit a truncated week. It is Tuesday, which means we've got Community Garda information coming up in the show a little later on. That and so much more besides. So we want you on board for the full 3 hours. And we want you involved in the conversation as well. What do you want to talk about? Anything that you think we should be talking about that you come across over the long weekend? Let us know. The lines are open for you right now. 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000. You can send your WhatsApp voice notes to that number as well. Or you can give us a call. Donna Marie taking your calls today on 07491 25,000. And if email is your thing, comments@highlandradio.com. That'll get us from wherever you happen to be listening. And you can also watch the show as well. Just a reminder for you, we're on YouTube, so you can watch us on your smart TV, your Fire Stick. Just type in Highland Radio Donegal and you'll be able to see us. We're going to be streaming live there. You'll just see the stream, watch live. And we're on Facebook too, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport, and on the X platform as well. Good to have you watching on X around the world or wherever you happen to be. Right, before we get our first guests on the show, let's have a look at what's making some of the front pages. And inside the Irish Times, the front page: Israel has reacted scathingly after European Union foreign policy chief Josep Borrell accused the country yesterday of using starvation as a weapon of war. In Gaza, we are in a state of famine affecting the thousands of people, Mr. Borrell said. Starvation is used as a weapon of war. Israel is provoking famine. The Israel foreign minister said Israel allows extensive humanitarian aid into Gaza by land, air and sea, despite Hamas attacks and convoys, which we just know that's simply not the case. It's as if we don't have ears and eyes. You can see quite clearly that large swathes of the population are starving. Children are malnourished. And they're eating effectively weeds just to try and survive. So to try and say that is not the case is really hard to swallow in this day and age. Mr. Kaz went on to say, it's time for EU Foreign Minister Borrell to stop attacking Israel and recognise our right to self-defence against Hamas crimes, he said. Mr. Borrell's comments came after a UN-backed report determined that famine is imminent and likely to occur in the next 2 months in northern Gaza, where some 200,000 residents remain largely cut off from humanitarian supplies. And you saw perhaps over the weekend some supplies being airdropped and the massive rush to go and acquire that. And, you know, every country probably has selfish bad people. And you just wonder if that way of delivering food means that those that need it most aren't actually getting it, and it becomes some sort of a currency, which would be really horrible to think, wouldn't it? On to the Irish Independent now, and ears open if you have a smart meter, because thousands of homeowners who have smart electricity meters have been warned the devices may be malfunctioning, leading to them being overcharged. Now, the problem here is, and I've said this before, and some of you out there probably know exactly what your bill should be, how it's worked out, what it's made up of and all that type of stuff. But I, and I think many others as well, it's so random. You get a bill inexplicably for your 2 months and it could be 198 if you're really lucky. And then you get a bill the following 2 months and it's 295. And then the next bill could be 463. And then the next bill could be like 192. I haven't a clue. Sometimes when, you know, make a big effort to reduce the usage, it's high. And other times you could have the sauna, have a sauna running and it's low. It doesn't make any sense. Maybe it's aggregated over the year. I don't know. But whatever way it's done, I can't keep track. Well, a string of householders have been in contact with the Irish Independent claiming that faults with their smart meter have led to them receiving bumper bills. They've been sent estimated bills despite the fact smart meters are supposed to automatically send real-time information to their electricity usage or on their electricity usage to ESB networks. Smart meters use a mobile phone signal to relay information on electricity use. Now, ESB Networks, which is responsible for the installation of the new meters, has admitted up to 80,000 meters may suffer from intermittent connectivity issues due to a weak mobile signal. But it strongly denied a batch of faulty meters had been installed in homes. So you might live in a mobile black spot and that means your meter struggles to contact base, so to speak. But as I say, there's just a random nature to electricity bills that I can't get my head around. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and the field is widening as it relates to the European elections in this area, which is Midlands North West. Former jockey Nina Carberry seeking to enter the race for the European Parliament for Fine Gael. Ms. Carberry, 39, a seven-time winner at Cheltenham and a Dancing with the Star champion, has put her name forward as potential candidate for the party in the Midlands North West constituency. In a message to Fine Gael members yesterday, the Meath woman said that her approach to politics will be defined by honesty, hard work and plain talking. In the Ireland and Europe of today, it is more important than ever for those who believe they can make a difference to put their hand up to make things happen. As a mother of two, she says, that is why I want to contest the European elections for Fine Gael this June to ensure a bright future ahead. It'll be interesting to see if we ever heard what the other two candidates might have to say. I think Maria Walsh will be less displeased, perhaps, than her running mate. The five-seater Midlands North West constituency, by the way, covers from Meath across to Galway and up to Donegal. And as I say, Fianna Fáil have three in. Fine Gael, they have two sitting MEPs at the moment, which will become a five-seater, of course, the two being Maria Walsh, as I mentioned, and Colm Markey. The party's selection convention takes place on Saturday of this week. Mr. Markey, I wonder what he might be thinking as it relates to where that might go. On to the Irish Star this morning, convicted Garda killer Piers McCauley, who also savagely stabbed his ex-wife 13 times, has died. The ex-IRA member, who was released from prison 2 years ago after serving just 7 years of a 12-year sentence for stabbing his ex-wife, Pauline Tully, was found dead in Strabane. Sources confirmed the former provost, who brutally killed Detective Garda Jerry McCabe in a crime that shocked the nation in 1996, appears to have died of natural causes. Sources further said that it appears McCauley, who was in his late 50s, 59 I believe, may have lay dead for a number of days. McCauley made international headlines when he broke out from Brixton Prison in 1991 as a member of the IRA. Interesting story about the implications of banning flavoured vapes. Moves to ban flavoured vapes will see an increase in people returning to smoking, it is claimed. Campaigners' call for action to reduce the attraction of vaping to teenagers and young adults have grown significantly in the last year. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly revealed intentions last September to ban disposable vapes in a crackdown that also targeted flavours and advertising. He previously branded flavours child-friendly. TDs then voted in the Dáil last November to ban the sale of vaping products to minors. In the UK, it was revealed in January that a range of flavours could be banned, reducing the number of those available to four in a bid to deter new users. Yesterday, a new poll was published in Ireland to reveal a warning that 76% of vapers believe a flavour ban could lead to more young people smoking, and some 71% claimed smokers would not take up vaping to quit if flavours were banned. Some vapers claim that banning them for under 18s would be more effective than a ban on flavoured vapes. Now, the bottom line is if you get a nicotine addiction, and any of you who've had one or have one will know exactly what I'm talking about, if you quite quickly become addicted to vaping and then that nicotine source is no longer available, you will seek out an alternative. Now, I'm not saying that means we shouldn't be banning flavours or what have you, but it is a reality that you will get nicotine however you can, because it's so bloody addictive. And finally, for those of you who are following the, I don't know what you would call it, the situation with the British royal family, Beaming Kate, as she's described here, says she's on the mend during a trip to a farm shop with devoted hubby William. The Princess of Wales, 42, appears fit and well and carries her own bag of goodies, a plastic bag at a farm shop, which is quite weird, and her own bag of goodies as she strolls past customers lunching outside. A passerby who took the footage described her as looking happy, relaxed and relieved. His exclusive images emerged after the Sun told yesterday how Kate had visited the Windsor farm shop close to her Adelaide Cottage home in Saturday. Now, this is very convenient that all of a sudden privately shot footage becomes available to a newspaper. there's absolutely no doubt this story would have been done in association with the royals. But a few people have been... Now, I'm not involved in this conspiracy about her, but a lot of people out there are, which is why I'm mentioning it. A couple of enhanced photos of the person pictured here. She looks completely different, has completely different teeth, actually, to Kate. So for those who... they probably put this out thinking that, you know, this will put all this speculation to bed. But in fact, it's done the opposite, because now people are more convinced than ever that that lady in these pictures isn't her. And that's about as much of that story I've been following, but I know some of you out there are quite interested in that. And a big thank you again to all of you out there who supported Highland Radio's big birthday charity fundraising drive on Friday. We had lots of good fun. I hope you enjoyed the bit of a mix-up on throughout the course of the day on Friday, people that you hear on different shows in different slots, and there was lots of fun, and we had lots and lots of fun being part of it, and I hope that came across as listeners or viewers if you watched any of the clips on social media. And people out there really, really generous right across the board, be it the auction or donating online or dropping cash and coins into our buckets down at the Letterkenny Shopping Centre. There'll be an update on that in the not-too-distant future. But again, thank you so very much to everyone who supported that. And what it means is that three brilliant charities, and we got to know them a little bit better too over the course of the week leading up to that charity day, they'll be receiving a really quite nice little generous donation too, which is great. Okay, now lots of you emailing, messaging in over the weekend as well. Yesterday, my 14-year-old son was injured at a school football match. He needed to go to the ED as advised by the medical staff at the school. Arrived at 1:33 in the afternoon, through to triage nurse quickly, quite quickly. Was advised he was being put on the purple pathway, which is a fast track for minor injuries, usually requiring an X-ray and fracture clinic referral. At 3:50, that's a couple of hours later, I asked nursing staff would he be called any time soon, and was told there was three in front of him. After 6:30, I asked again and was told two in front of him. Then sometime around 7:30 in the evening, I asked the receptionist would it be possible to speak to whoever was managing the department, to be told there is no manager of that department, and was handed a survey sheet on our experience at the hospital and the visit. And if I had an issue, to email them. I was told to go into the treatment area and track down the nurse in charge. I was reluctant to do that, as they're very busy caring for patients. Anyway, long story short, I was told as the doctor doing purple pathway finishes around 5:30 and didn't get around to my son. He was just added to the list of persons already waiting, hence the delay. So finally, shortly after 8 p.m, he was called, and it took less than 30 minutes to have him x-rayed and referred to the fracture clinic. Surely 8 hours for a simple x-ray for a teenager is an excessive wait. How can any department be operating without a manager, never mind an ED that is dealing with people's lives? I totally and fully understand the pressure that is on this department, and not in any way the fault of nurses and doctors on the floor. Someone somewhere needs to look at the bigger picture and work out some way of improving this service. It's the total lack of communication to patients waiting that's frustrating. You just sit and sit and sit. And then possibly pop to the toilet to miss your name being called. Then you just wait and wait again. Unfortunately, that is an experience. It's not new. I've sat in there for 8 or 9 hours with someone seeking an x-ray as well. So we know what you're talking about. Rightio, as you would know, we've got apps out there now and websites where you can track vessels off our coast and get some information as to what they're doing out there. It can be quite useful, but I know, speaking to some inshore fishermen who are really quite curtailed in what they can do, it is incredibly frustrating, because often you can see right off our coast big vessels from outside this jurisdiction effectively just fishing at will. Okay, let's say good morning to Sinn Féin Deputy Pádraig McLaughlin. Good morning, Pádraig. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
I know this is something you keep an eye on, and you posted on this on your socials over the weekend. What did you spot?
Well, I think that the issues for me stem from this really impressive 14-year-old girl from Aranmore Island, Murren Kavanagh, and Murren is just the latest generation. At least three, maybe four or five generations of her family have fished off Aranmore. they're what's called low impact fishermen. She would work with a hook and line, and she would be fishing for pollock, and she's not catching all that money, and they have a wee market for them, and it's just the latest generation of her family. But she was told that pollock isn't allowed to be caught by anybody, serial catch, unless you have a thing called bycatch. That's where you would catch other species, but pollock would be caught up in it. So they do allow bycatch, they allow some pollock, but she can't fish. She wrote to Minister Charlie McConlogue, and it was a powerful letter. It was all over social media. It caught the imagination of a lot of people around the country. And the minister wrote back to her and explained why she wasn't allowed to catch. And I happened to be reading an article around the same time.
20 minutes before she came on the show, actually, which was quite interesting.
Yeah, and there was that response there. And she's just captured the imagination of people around the country. It's just the power of her letter, the maturity, the sense of injustice that she sees in terms of fishing communities, and I see it all the time all around the coast. But around the same time all this was happening, I managed to read a very long article, a superb piece of journalism that focused on a huge Dutch corporation called Parlevliet and Van der Plas, are known as PVP, a massive corporation. And this corporation, based in Holland, you would see super trawlers every year. In fact, the two biggest super trawlers in the world are owned by this company, and factory ships, huge factory ships. And they do this perfectly legally, because they buy up quota. So in a lot of member states, a lot of European countries, they sell quota that is supposed to be belonging to their people. But they sell it to corporations, and this corporation has just been buying up quota left, right and centre across a wide range of countries. They have about 1.5 billion in revenue. They are subsidised heavily by the European Union. And you see two different Europes and two different common fisheries policy. One for the likes of Murrin Cavna and, small-scale fishermen, or indeed Irish fishermen in general, and fishing communities, and for the likes of this huge corporation. And you have a situation where they preach to us about sustainability and sustainability of the catch, while we're sitting out looking at a small city. You literally have the super trawler and the super factory
just
ship
in relation
fishing
to that,
side
I mean,
by side.
How do we know what they're doing out there? I mean, who is policing it? How are they catching the fish? How are they ensuring that what they're actually catching is what they have the quotas for, and that they actually aren't decimating other stocks, either by landing them — I'm sure they wouldn't do that because it's illegal — but if they don't have a quota for them, what do they do with those fish? Are they returned to the sea? Do they live? What impact does that have on our fishing waters more generally, and the balance of species and all that type of stuff? Because they're not landed, it's all done at sea, right? So who is policing them to ensure that they are, which I'm sure they are, operating completely legally, and their fishing activity is not having a knock-on impact on other species that they don't have quota for?
No, absolutely. And one of the vessels that I referred to, the Margiris, would have left a trail of discarded fish behind them in the Bay of Biscay in recent times. There's serious concern about the way that they are fishing, and obviously they're looking for a particular type of species, maximizing profitability. It's a really unsustainable, in my opinion, form of fishing, and indeed in a hell of a lot of people's opinion. And the question you're asking is really important, Greg, because if you look at the Killybegs right now, it's a town that built up an industry of visionary people who worked really hard to build up an industry for fishing, particularly pelagic, which is basically mackerel, blue whiting, and so on. The fish that would be at the top of the ocean. And that's what they built up, and that is under serious pressure right now. And one of the big reasons why is that you have the Sea Fisheries Protection Authority, basically, that oversees and polices fishing in Ireland, who took a very, very stringent and incredibly strict approach to the catch that lands at our piers and harbours all across the state. But if you look at these huge vessels, they go back to their home country, and the standard of oversight is just day and night. So you have two different rules being applied. These massive vessels, and indeed nearly all European vessels, the standard of oversight of them versus the Irish fleet is night and day.
But with all
and
that in
impacts
mind,
on catch.
Yeah, but with all that in mind, we are now sort of at the point where, you know, it's very important that the public know what you would do if we have an election, if your party is in power, and if, say, for instance, you had the marine portfolio. I recognise there's a lot of ifs in there, right? But, you know, like, these decisions are made at European level. We huff and we puff, and we try and get an extra bit here and an extra bit there. But at the end of the day, you know, we are deal takers from Europe. What could you do as the marine minister for Moran, for example?
Well, the problem right now is we don't actually have a minister for the marine. So we're an island nation and we don't have a dedicated minister. We have a minister for agriculture, food and the marine, and that's Charlie McConlogue from Donegal. We have two junior ministers and not one of them focuses on the marine, which is incredible. So that's the first big commitment, is that if Sinn Féin find herself in government, if the people want that after the next election, we would have a dedicated minister of state for the marine. So focusing on the brief.
Minister of state?
We would look at the Department of Marine.
You wouldn't have a full minister for the marine?
No, a minister of state, when we've talked, if you talk to the fishing representative groups, they just want a dedicated minister. You know, somebody who dedicates all their time to the brief, you know, that engages with the industry, that has a plan at European level. And as you know, about a year and a half ago, Greg, I would have been out in Brussels, and myself and Chris McManus, MEP, we would have taken out the leaders of the Irish fishing industry, united them. They united together, and we ensured they got in front of the European Commission to the top person, the Director General, who deals with fisheries, and to make their case for themselves, to speak for themselves directly. So there needs to be a change of strategy at Europe. There needs to be a dedicated resource out there. There needs to be truth spoken to power. Like, we need to talk about this huge Dutch corporation that has bought up quota across Europe that makes a mockery of all of the language. So it's about having a genuine plan.
Excellent, and I get you. But in terms of, in other words, we could have a position, a very strong position, okay, but how does that deliver for the industry or for the people? Because Minister Charlie McConlogue, if he were on this programme right now, he would say that he huffed and he puffed and he got the best possible deal that he could for Irish fishermen. What could Sinn Féin do differently to deliver a future for Moran and for other fishers out there? Because, you know, I was talking to fishers not so long ago and they were saying to me, is there a future? These are hardworking young people out there in this instance who are out, you know, out in the middle of the day, often having to go far out to sea, really, that it's not possibly safe, but that's where they have their, that's where they have their quotas and what have you. You know, what can you say to them? What can you promise to deliver for them if in government? Because we're at that point now, Pádraig, you know that, because, you know, it's almost go time.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Greg. And I mean, I speak to the industry representatives, you know, every day all across Ireland for inshore, for islands and for all the offshore organisations. And what they ask, all of them, is that you have a dedicated focus, number one. So you have a dedicated minister that focuses on this issue. And that number two, you genuinely, that's all they're asking, that you genuinely go out and fight in Europe, that you speak truth to power, that you tell them that the common fisheries policy is an injustice to Ireland. You know, for example, right now, we have negotiations where Iceland, and this is incredible, when I talked about Killybegs, I talked about Greencastle, I talked about all our piers and harbours across Donegal between Greencastle and Killybegs. You know, all of them will tell you that they're struggling. Imagine that you'd even countenance allowing Iceland, you know, a country with a population the size of Belfast, that you would countenance allowing them to get the same amount of blue whiting as the entire Irish fleet. Mm-hmm. That has been countenanced right now at European level.
So
there has to be a point where we stand up to them.
Of course you do. You have a dedicated then junior minister, right, Minister of State. You have a firm policy that backs the industry. How does that actually deliver for them, though? I mean, it's great that, you know, standing shoulder to shoulder and all that type of stuff, but this is about jobs and futures and what have you. What do you believe, honestly, that Sinn Féin can deliver for Irish fishermen that the current government currently isn't, other than a strong voice, dedicated junior minister. What will you be fit to deliver, do you think?
What I've outlined, Greg, is dramatically different from what's happening right now. And, you know, it's a bit like a football team that doesn't have an actual manager. There's somebody who drops in, you know, every couple of weeks and sees how they're getting on and, you know, come on, lads, give it everything this week, and isn't there for the training, isn't there for all the overwork that goes on. You know, that's what we have right now. You know, we don't have a dedicated manager looking at the team, looking at the game plan, having a strategy. And that's all the industry are asking. I mean, we have to negotiate with other member states. We have to convince them of this injustice. We have to speak truth again. I say it again, speak truth to power, speak truth to the highest level of the European Commission, you know, to the commissioner, to the director generals. We need to have a dedicated presence out there. Right now, I don't think our presence is anywhere strong enough. So, I mean, that's what the industry are asking. They're asking for somebody who actually shows up, rolls up their sleeves every day, and actually genuinely tries to turn this around. That's all they're asking.
That's what we're committing to. A caller says that you spoke in support of small fishermen in the Dáil, and on the same day voted to reinstate legislation that allows these corporations to fish in our inland waters. They say effectively destroying the livelihood of small fishermen. Did you vote in favour of legislation that...
I haven't a clue what that caller's talking about.
Okay.
You know, if you want to pass my mobile number on to that caller, I'm more than happy to speak to them, but I haven't a clue what they're talking about.
No, and I wanted to mention it to you whilst you were on air rather than mention it off air. But, I mean, the situation is as it is. We appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks.
All right, take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Liam O'Brien's an inshore fisherman. Hi, Liam.
Hello, Greg. Good morning.
I was asking...
No, Greg.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was asking about, you know, the policing of our waters and what have you. You believe the Navy have a role?
Well, as Parry is talking there about a football team, we have no referee in it because... there's only one Navy boat, one vessel, for the amount of water that we have. We have plenty of fishery officers, SFP officers, and even that, they're not at water.
No.
But when the foreign vessels do come into our ports, nobody goes near them. But if our small vessels or our whitefish fleet or pelagic fleet come in, we're hassled by our own SFPA, our own officials and the departments here. And these people can come down onto our waters, like you see here, where there's all this drugs coming on right through the coast from Cork to Donegal, right around. If them fishermen are not there on the coastlines and go away from them coastlines, they're more active because there's no Navy there. They're actually getting their intelligence from other countries coming in and falling that way.
Well, I think it's generally accepted that we are seen as a soft touch in terms of bringing drugs into Europe via Ireland. I mean, in fairness, the Gardaí did seem to make some inroads down in Cork towards the end of last week. But that's the tip of the iceberg stuff, given the extent of our coastline.
But getting back to the fishing... Like, I'm in Greencastle, I'm going down to a pier now. I might see three fishermen and maybe 40 up to 40 boats, onshore boats down that harbour there.
Well, what are they,
to mismanagement of fisheries.
Well, what are they doing then? Are the boats just tied up? Are they not getting paid to tie the boats up?
They're getting crumbs at the table, and a lot of them maybe can't afford to keep their boats maintained with COCs. Crew's a big problem. We can't get crew. I'm getting ready here now to go. What you're talking there about the pollock and that. We have fish pollock around the Donegal coast for direct fishing. I have to go to the prawns, back to the prawns this year. I've no crew, man. I can't get crew. There's nobody. There's actually two young lads left from Christmas that haven't been replaced on the harbour nanny boat. They've left. And there's no young men coming into the industry.
But so, like, is the industry not almost dead on its feet now then anyway? Can it be saved, in your view?
It's on a life support machine. That's what it's on. It's on a life support machine at the moment. And it's not getting any better. It's getting worse, Greg. We've no young recruitment into the industry.
Mm-hmm. Also, too, the science obviously dictates it, and we're told it's the science, that, you know, we can't fish more pollock than, you know, just focusing on the pollock for a second. like, and that science seems off. I don't know. There seems plenty of pollock about from the people I talk to. But, I mean, that's anecdotal. I can't argue with the science. But how can the science sort of then account for these factory boats off our coast doing whatever they want to do, you know, sucking the life out of the sea effectively, processing it and taking it wherever they might take it? We don't even benefit from landing with these vessels. Like, how can the science keep, you know, effectively small fishermen off the water, and yet these massive factories, these floating cities can really, with very little oversight, do whatever they like a little bit further out?
The only way, I think the only way you could do that is put European observers on the vessels that they are taking their product and not taking too much, or not taking products that is protected under quota management.
Yeah.
They will have to put, if they're coming into our waters, they have to be monitored and managed by the fisheries on board the vessel. They do it in other places. They have. I was doing surveys in the sea where the lad was going away. He had to go down to Spain to get on a vessel to go out to monitor the tuna fishing on behalf of the EU and on behalf of the Irish contingent that is fishing down there. Why can it not be done here? The same thing done here. If these vessels are entering our waters, to put on Irish marine monitors on the vessels.
Yeah. Okay. Liam, listen, always a pleasure.
I know the quota that we're getting us across.
Yeah, I'll get you, Liam. Listen, safe fishing. I know, as you said, you're preparing to head out.
No bother, Greg.
All right, it's a bit calmer out there today, isn't it? All right, thanks very much indeed. 08660 25,000, the WhatsApp and text number. You're very welcome back to the programme, and I'm very pleased to welcome into studio Annette Sweeney, who's a learning support teacher and head of special needs department at St. Eunan's. Good morning to you, Annette.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling in. And we also have with us Una Murphy, who is a special needs assistant. Thanks so much also, Una, for calling on.
Thank you.
All right, good stuff. We are speaking. This week is International Neurodiversity Week. When we refer to neurodiversity, Annette, talk to us about that. And I don't know, is it the concept of it or the meaning of it or what it encompasses?
Yes, Greg, thanks for having us up, firstly. Neurodiversity is a concept that neurological differences such as autism, ADHD, dyslexia, these are all natural variations in the human brain. So rather than looking at these conditions as disorders or defects, that we're sort of looking at the whole individual. And it's a worldwide initiative. And the aim of it is really to challenge some of the stereotypes and the misconceptions that are around dyslexia and ADHD, autism, and create an awareness, I suppose, about pupils with learning difficulties, that having a diagnosis such as dyslexia, let's say, doesn't need to hold a pupil back. So quite the opposite. Sometimes it allows them to be incredibly successful in life.
And Una, because I suppose, you know, maybe there is a stigma or you know, when people be labelled with something, we're trying to see through that, aren't we?
Yeah, I think that's something more that was in the past. I feel that we're well past now labelling children. Like Annette says, we look at the whole individual. Every child has their talent. It's up to us to find it and nurture it. And that's what I think we do really well up in St. Eunan's.
Yeah, indeed. And we were speaking to some parents whose experience in different schools can be different, right? Do you think, you are doing very well at St. Eunan's, but do you think we need to sort of be having a more of a, you know, across the board approach to this, so every parent and every child's experience is as positive
absolutely,
as it is for those.
Absolutely, because I'm sure
humans.
There can be negative experiences for children, but we have a great team on the ground up there. You try to get to know the boys. You know that they know you're there for them. That might not be their teacher they're calling on to. It might be the special needs assistant, but we can pass that on then wherever anything needs to go. As I say, we have very open door policy in the AEN department, and the boys can come anytime and tell us if there's something that's bothering them.
I presume too, Annette, you know, from a teaching perspective, if you go in with your eyes open in this regard, it makes it easier for everyone, for the school and for the teachers as well, I'd imagine, you know, that if you're geared up to deal with people with different needs, with different neurodiversity criteria, then it makes it an easier place to work, if you get where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I suppose it's that we celebrate that it's not how are you smart, it's how are you smart.
Yeah.
So some kids we do tend to judge on literacy and numeracy scores, but some pupils are amazing speakers. They're really good interpersonal skills. They could be artistic. They could be musical. So I suppose it's about championing all of that. And I suppose it's too that we're sort of moving into a new era now where people don't judge someone that's dyslexic as maybe being a slow learner, which is what it would have been maybe years ago, where when I know my parents, when they were at school, you couldn't even be left-handed. Mm. So I suppose we've sort of moved forward, and we wouldn't have the beautiful art of Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, who was dyslexic. I mean, Einstein couldn't read till he was 9 and failed all his math tests up until that. So I suppose it's showing it's really empowering these students that school may be difficult for them, but there's a great big world out there, and if they're listened to and heard at school, that we're sort of championing their abilities and their talents.
And I wonder too sometimes, Una, and I don't want to get too deep on this, but you know how we assess someone's intelligence, uh-huh, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
You know, we are talking at the moment about reform of the Leaving Cert and what have you.
Yeah.
Would we be better off if we found a more nuanced way to actually, you know, I don't know, I was going to say judge, but it's not judge, but you know what I mean, recognise,
yeah,
people's abilities rather than it being on reading and writing and...
Absolutely, and that, like, we need to just find the boys' talents and nurture that. Mm. And it may not be on the Leaving Cert or it may not be in the Junior Cert exams, but it is there. And I think if the boys feel that they're listened to and they have maybe one good person in school, or they know a team of these good people that's there to support them, and, you know, sometimes the boys, I might be chatting to them about the live marts that they're watching or about Scania lorries. And, you know, we would chat about that as much as we chat about what they're reading in English.
Yeah, and I also too think it benefits all students, doesn't it? And we'll talk a little bit more about what's happening throughout the week. But rather than it being a situation whereby individuals who are neurodiverse being seen as, you know, different or whatever, I think it gives the whole school population a better understanding that we are all the same. Mm-hmm. We just maybe have little differences here and there.
Yeah, that we all have strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, that's it.
And in the planning for this week, I reached out to some celebrities and well-known people who have dyslexia. So they've, like, Rory O'Connor from Rory's Stories sent a really beautiful personal message to the boys. Like, he's such an inspiration. He's dyslexic and ADHD and is now writing his 5th best-selling book. So for the boys to hear that, it's so empowering. Mm. Do you know that he struggled at school and he's such a success? Also, Brendan O'Carroll sent a lovely message yesterday that we're going to play all these messages now to the pupils this week.
Lovely. Eric Roberts.
Yes.
Jason Black. You mentioned Rory O'Connor from Rory Stories. And also Donegal Daddy is going to be visiting the school.
Yeah. So they're all championing the cause and creating this whole awareness. And like what you said, it's like creating an inclusive school. And I suppose it's really that people look at someone with a neurological difference as not less than that they have their unique strengths and talents as well. And we need that in society. We need that.
Yeah,
that,
and it's interesting because I would say there's a mixture in there, and I know some, I don't know all, Una, of people that, you know, went through the school process but only got a diagnosis relatively recently.
Yeah.
And I have spoken to people like that in the past, and then it's like everything makes sense sort of a moment.
Yeah, and that's really good for that person to have that, even if it is later in life. I'm sure they probably struggled in school not having a diagnosis, but the diagnosis doesn't define the person either.
Okay, and there's other stuff coming up as well. World Down Syndrome Day is on Thursday, mm-hmm, which I was speaking to Lee off air about just before that. There's an Odd Socks competition. Finally, something I could accidentally win.
Yeah, well, we could all win that one.
And a coffee morning on Friday as well.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
It's just to sort of create a little bit of a buzz around the school and to sort of get maybe all of these boys together just to see how many, that they're not alone and that there's so many in the school now that access support and it's not something to be not to be proud of and have their teachers there and the SNAs. Mm-hmm. Like, we have an incredible team in St. Junan's of teachers and, like, we have fantastic staff. Like, we would not be able to do our jobs as teachers without SNA support. So, like, we're really, really lucky.
But I presume, too, also you do see the fruits of this approach, don't you, in the students?
Yeah, you do. I know now for a few of my students, they just love having the chat. And as I say, we don't always get to do it, but when we do, you can tell they're enjoying it. Mm. And that's what you want. You want them coming in and enjoying some part of school. It might not be what's happening in the classroom all the time, but there's plenty of other activities they can get involved in. We have lots of lunch clubs that's available to the boys every day. And that's sometimes where they have their fun.
Yeah, okay. Anything else you want to mention, Annette? You're the one brought in all the paper with you.
No, that's it. It's really just to sort of just highlight what we're doing really in St. Junan's. And I suppose this is our first week. We registered for taking part in the International Neurodiversity Week. It's our first time ever doing this. So I suppose we'll add to it as years, as year on year, we'll add to it. So that's really all I wanted to say, really.
A caller says, and there was some other rang in just on the other topic that I was speaking about how her struggles with her particular school. I'm not saying where it is or what have you, but it was the fact that what come across for me in the conversation with her is that she felt very isolated, that she thought she was the only one going through this with her son and the struggles to sort of...
I think that that's...
It's nice to talk about it publicly. And the reason I mention that, because the caller says it's such a relief hearing this on air, long gone are the days of the slow class.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important part
I
of this
I think
week.
That there is sort of still a stigma. Do you know, there's still that, you know, where students feel that they're going to learn a support teacher. And there isn't enough, like people like my generation that would talk about whether they were dyslexic. So sometimes these celebrities coming out and saying, I had this challenge and I've overcome it and I'm successful. So that's the whole real purpose of this week, is to kind of just get rid of that, to be proud to be dyslexic or have autism.
Yeah.
Because there's so many unique talents associated with that.
And a theme of this week too is creativity, isn't it? And that will be put out throughout the school, but also using TikTok, of course, where you can be as creative as you want to be. So people can check that out from outside the school too as well, presumably on the school TikTok.
Yeah, all the videos and everything that we're talking about will be shared on our St. Junan's Facebook page. So everyone will be able to see all the different things that we're doing this week. Mm.
A caller wants to know, do either of you have a view on the higher and lower labelling of classes in school?
Well, it's mixed ability.
Yeah. I think we do have to have a system, though, whereby we can ensure that people maximise their abilities for academic level.
There
has to be some structure in there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I don't think sort of, I wouldn't say level in the playing field, but I think you do need some of those structures in there, don't you?
Yeah.
For universities and all that that come. Is there anything that you wish to add, Una?
No, I just hope the boys have a really good week up in St. Junan's, and we're very excited now to get involved this week and looking forward to the Odd Sock competition on Thursday.
Excellent. I think I get a sense too that you're all very proud of the students and the SNAs and the other teachers, what they're doing there as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant stuff. Okay.
Can I just say hello to my mum, Cassie, out in Trenta? I'm just going to tell her she can blow out the holy handle now. I'm going off air.
But I'm going to ask you again, Annette, like I ask other guests who come in and don't want to do it. Was it that bad?
No, it wasn't that
bad.
See, I told
you.
It wasn't that bad.
If you asked Cassie would have told you. Greg's all right. He'll make it easy. He'll go easy on you. All right. Listen, well done to you. Thank you so much. And it's going to be a lovely week, I've absolutely no doubt. Yeah. The coffee morning, is that for the school? Or can people drop in or what?
No, it's just for the students and the teachers, just to create a community
within
the school.
All right, brilliant stuff. Okay. And well, Down Syndrome Day Thursday, which will be great fun. And it's lovely, as you say, to get the words of the likes of Brendan, Eric, Jason. Brilliant achievers in their chosen fields, all doing different types of stuff, lots of creativity and all that type of stuff as well. All right, both of you, thank you. thank you so very much indeed.
Thank you,
I really
Greg.
Appreciate
thank
you calling in. That's Annette Sweeney and Una Murphy from St. Eunan's. A caller says it's amazing the amount of talented people who can become overlooked because of labels. Well, let's get rid of that too. We all have a role in it, and even little conversations on small shows like this, it all helps down the line, doesn't it? Lots of you texting in on electricity bills and also fishing. So we're going to get to all of that in the next hour. Just to remind you, coming up after 10 o'clock, after the news and obituary notices with Donal, we will have Community Garda information where we'll bring you the very latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána, First in Life here on the 9 till Noon show.